He has told you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you, but to do justice, and to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. Last Lord's Day, we began considering Micah chapter 6. We saw where God, as a plaintiff in a law court, had brought his people Israel, as it were, to the point of judgment. He is the plaintiff, and God said that he has a case or a lawsuit against his people. And then we suggested that we ourselves must substitute ourselves for Israel, because one day God will himself bring us before the bar of his own justice, as every thought, every word, and every deed is scrutinized by the judgment of God on the last day. You will remember that we said in this court trial that God had called upon the witnesses of the heavens as well as the very foundations of the earth to bear him testimony that he had done all of these good things for his people, but they had consistently turned against him. And so finally, as the gavel is about to fall and the sentence will inevitably be guilty, guilty, guilty of the crime as charged, someone or perhaps the prophet cries out, "With what then shall we come before the Lord?" In verse 6, "What shall I then bring before the Lord? In order to appease God, in order to gain God's acceptance, in order to remove his animosity and his hostility and his judgment upon me, with what shall I come before this God?" And we suggested that Micah, or this person who is crying out saying, "How can I appease God?" he offers three possible alternatives, which were wrong ways of coming to God. The first way is indicated in verse 7. As it says, "Does the Lord take delight in thousands of rams and 10,000 rivers of oil?" In other words, can I offer to God some great material offering? Can I give to him everything that I have, as it were, and in order to gain God's acceptance of me? That's wrong. Then the other suggestion in verse 6 is, "Shall I come to him with burnt offerings, with yearling calves?" The idea there is, shall I give to God some consistent religious obedience in order to gain God's acceptance? Can I live a good and perfect and ethical lifestyle in order to impress God and so that he may accept me? Can I go to church? Can I read my Bible? Can I pray? Can I be involved in altruistic deeds toward other people, of helping them, of being kind to them? But that's wrong too. But then the other suggestion was the most alarming of all. It is this: "Shall I present my firstborn for my rebellious acts, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul?" In other words, can I give to God some great religious moment or some great religious experience in order to gain God's acceptance? But that's wrong too. You see, if you and I are looking first and foremost for some great religious experience, then Christianity is, in the first instance, not that. Why do you believe Christianity? C.S. Lewis said, I believe Christianity not because it will make me happy, but because it is true. Do you believe it because it will do something to you experientially, or because it is true? You see, your hope of eternity is not based upon either your giving to God some material goods, nor is it based upon your goodness, nor is it based upon even the intensity of your religious feelings. Your hope of eternity is based upon this one thing, and this alone, that Jesus Christ is your righteousness, and you have been clothed in His snow-white purity, so that when you come to stand before the judgment bar of God, you have been clothed upon with Jesus Christ. And God, as He looks at you, looks not at your sin, but He looks at you, as it were, through the spectacles of the perfect righteousness of Jesus Christ. Do not depend upon your goods or your goodness, upon your good experience, but depend upon this and this alone, that Jesus alone is your righteousness. Is that what you depend on? Well, those were the wrong ways. Those were the wrong ways of gaining acceptance with God. What then is the right way? The prophet in this section goes on to spell out what the right way is. He says in verse 8, He has told you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require? He doesn't require just material goods. You can't do that to gain His acceptance. He doesn't require just a good life. You can't do that to gain His acceptance. He doesn't require just a good experience. You can't do that to gain His acceptance. But this is what He requires. But to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God. You see, after you come to faith in Christ, these then are those requirements or standards that you and I must live by. There are three here. We don't have time to finish all of them today. So we're going to save and to walk humbly, because it will take at least a full sermon to treat the matter of our walking humbly with God, so that today, this morning, we want to consider just two: that we should do justice, and secondly, that we should love kindness. For that is what God requires of you and me. That is the standard of our goodness. Do justice. Justice is probably the most elementary principle of morality. It is probably the most elementary principle of our relationship with other people. It can be summarized in just two words. That is, be fair. Be fair. But the interesting thing is that the standard of fairness is not based upon our standard of fairness, but on God's standard of fairness or justice. Thomas Chalmers was the premier preacher in Scotland at the first part of the 18th century. He once preached a sermon entitled "The Folly of Men Measuring Themselves by Themselves." Dr. Chalmers noted in this sermon how we usually measure ourselves by our own standards, and so we actually always come out smelling like a rose. He pointed out how we may appear noble and good and honest and pure, as long as we're using other people to judge the standard of our lives. A group of criminals have their own standard of behavior or have their own ethical code. But you and I, in our ethical code, would not approve of the ethical code of that particular group of criminals, even though they are just among themselves. But you see, you and I, according to the Bible, our standard, our code, our morality is based upon a system of fairness, a standard which is in essence criminal. Because God's standard from our standard is as different as our standard is different from a collection of criminals. Because God's standard is that which is absolute and perfect and good and pure, whereas our standard is based upon a comparative basis of how we fare in relation to other people. But you see, friends, what really matters is not whether we have gained acceptance, whether we live acceptably before other people, whether we gain the admiration and the prestige and the acknowledgement of those about us. Nor is it even the real question whether we have gained or that we live acceptably in our own sight. But the real question is this: will we gain acceptance? Will our standard measure up when we are brought into God's court of jurisprudence? Will our standard then measure up to what God's standard will be of us? Christian, how much is there really of God's standard of justice, of God's standard of fairness, in the way that you treat your fellow Christians, in the way that you treat your wife, in the way that you treat your husband and your children and your business associates, and the way that you fill out your income taxes? Is it indeed God's system of fairness and justice? Or have you become so adapted and accepting of the standard of fairness and justice that we men are able to see, but we can't really see what God's standard of justice is? And that's really all that matters. Now, there is a related question to this. That is, someone might say, "But preacher, do you mean to say that nothing I do or that my own goodness will not enable me to gain acceptance in God's sight, and that nothing I do will enable God to accept me and approve me, and that nothing I do will help me to get to heaven?" That's exactly what I'm saying. Suppose you were on an island in the sea, and you were at least 20 miles from the mainland shore. There were a group of you, say five, and the only way to get to shore was to swim. And so the first man attempted the swim, and he swam out about a mile, and then he sank. He didn't make it. And then the next man tried, and he swam for 5 miles, and then he didn't make it. And the next man swam for 10, and the next one 15, and one even went as far as 19.9 miles, but he didn't make it. None of the men made it to the shore. None of the men were safe simply by their own efforts and swimming. You see, in the same way, you and I on this earth cannot swim or get to heaven by any effort of our own. And it doesn't matter whether we improve or whether we swim 1 mile or 19.9 miles, the Bible teaches that none of us, simply by swimming, can get to heaven by our own efforts, because all of us will sink. And that what we need is to get into the lifeboat, to receive Jesus Christ as our Savior and Lord, and He will bear us safely to shore. Well, what I'm saying is that the first principle of morality, as we're reflected on in this text, is to do justice. That the only way we can be accepted according to God's justice is through Jesus Christ. But that also we have this morality placed upon us, and that is that we are to be fair in our relationship with other people. Indeed, God says in Amos 5:24, let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. Let justice roll down. Justice. Our catechism says, what is the sixth commandment? The answer, the sixth commandment is, thou shalt not murder. Now, you would think at first looking at that commandment that what it is saying is that we should not take the life of somebody else. We should not kill another person. And it does mean exactly that. But the next question in the catechism says this: what are the duties required in the sixth commandment? Answer: the duties required in the sixth commandment are all careful studies and lawful endeavors to preserve the life of ourselves and others by resisting all thoughts and purposes, subduing all passion, and avoiding all occasions, temptations, and practices which tend to the unjust taking away of the life of any. You see, the sixth commandment says that we are not merely not to take the life of someone else, but rather that even our unjust communication about people, our gossip, our evil reporting, our slandering, also is taking the life of someone else. And it isn't fair. It lacks justice. Now, the New Testament expression of justice is this, of fairness is this. Matthew 7:12, and Jesus said, upon this hang all the law and the prophets. That is, the law can be summarized in just this one verse. Do you know what it is? Whatever you want men to do for you, that is exactly what you should do for them. Can you imagine a world in which everybody is anxiously trying to do something for the other person rather than always wondering what he should do for me? Can you imagine a church? Can you imagine a home where a husband is more concerned about doing for his wife than he is for his wife doing for him? Or where a wife is more concerned about what she can do for her husband? A husband coming in at night then would have this experience, not of coming in saying, where is the paper? Where did you put the mail? Bring me a glass of tea. Where are my slippers? Bring me the newspaper. Don't bother me. But rather it would be, sweetheart, listen, I know you've been working all day. why don't you sit down? Let me bring you a glass of tea. That would revolutionize a home, wouldn't it? But how would it be also in a church? The principle works there. What if you came to church, to this church, this morning? When you came, did you expect something to happen? Did you expect somebody to really pour himself out to you and make you feel that you were warmly received and that you were a part of this body and it was great to have you here this morning? Then if you expected that, then before you leave this sanctuary, if you want to fulfill Jesus' standard of justice and fairness, then you must seek out somebody sitting next to you or behind you or in front of you or before you leave this church, and you say to them, "It was great to have you today. It's so good to see you. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad that you were here." That is God's standard of fairness, of justice. But secondly, we also have in this text love kindness. You see, justice is dealing simply in strict fairness. Strict fairness. I give to you and you give the same back to me. You give to me and I give the same back to you. But that is hardly enough in God's system of values, because the Bible teaches that God exercises justice, but that God is love. God has justice, but God is love. You see, justice is strict fairness. If justice is the first principle of morality, then the second principle, its twin sister, is to love kindness or mercy. When you eat a bologna sandwich, don't you like to put mustard and mayonnaise on your sandwich? Now that's a real bologna sandwich. It takes both. I don't remember much of what my father taught me, but I remember him teaching me how to make a bologna sandwich. You see, we need both. In God's system of value, in our treatment, in our relationship with people, well, God deals with us in two ways. He deals with us, as it were, with the mustard of God's justice and then the mayonnaise of God's mercy. Hosea reminds us of what God's loving kindness is. You remember the story. In the event of Hosea's life, how God told him, go take a prostitute for your wife. Imagine this preacher taking a prostitute for his wife, and she began to exercise her profession again. She left home. Hosea did love his wife Gomer. And God told Hosea, go back and to buy Gomer back. So there she is on the city street, up on the block, being sold at an auction. And Hosea comes up and he says, I offer my money, I buy my wife back. That is a picture of God's loving kindness, how you and I have prostituted him and his word and his truth. But he says, even so, I love you. And if I dealt with you in strict justice, then I would squash everybody. You know what's puzzling to me? How some people are always yelling for their rights, for justice and fairness for themselves. Friend, I want you to imagine in your mind's eye a hill outside of Jerusalem. It is called Golgotha. And there is a man hanging upon a tree who never committed one sin in his life, but he has nails in his hands and a crown of thorns upon his head, and he is suffering hell. And that is God's justice. That is God's fairness. That is what you deserve. Do you want your rights? Do you want justice? Do you want fairness? Friend, then you look at Calvary. That's justice. But it wasn't the justice to Jesus Christ. It was justice that we should have gotten. Because there on the cross, God not only demonstrated justice, He also demonstrated loving kindness. And here in Micah 6, we have this great summary of what Christ was to do. Because you could not fulfill the system of justice and fairness, because you could not fulfill God's loving kindness and mercy, even though He has shown us what it is, He brought us to Calvary and He said, "Here it is. I fulfill all my justice. My justice is going to be meted out because my wrath and my holiness, my goodness, my justice must be satisfied." And there it was, satisfied at Calvary's cross. But there is mercy poured out. As Psalmist says, loving kindness and truth have kissed each other. Because on the cross, God's justice and God's loving kindness embraced one another. That is the cross. That is God's way of dealing in justice and mercy. And now He says to you and me, be fair, be just, exercise loving kindness to one another. Mercy will always find a way to love and to be kind to one another. Is your life reflecting God's loving kindness too? He has showed us, Christian, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you and me but to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with our God? Let us stand for the closing prayer and benediction.